This is Progressive Radio, a weekly conversation hosted by Matthew Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine, a leading voice for peace and social justice. For more information about Progressive Radio or The Progressive Magazine, log on to our website at progressive.org.
I'm Matt Rothschild, and welcome to Progressive Radio, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. Today, I'm delighted to have in the studio with me Dr. Mads Gilbert, co-author of a book, a very powerful and devastating book called Eyes in Gaza. Dr. Gilbert's a Norwegian doctor. He's worked for the Norwegian Palestine Committee. He's treated Palestinian victims of the Israeli occupation. He's also done work in Cambodia and Burma. He's a professor of medicine at the University of North Norway, the northernmost university in the world, he tells me. And he's also at the University Hospital of North Norway. Dr. Gilbert, thanks for joining me here at Progressive Radio.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I was looking forward to talking with you because I was going through your book, and it was a haunting book. How did you get interested in the Palestinian issue?
Well, as most Norwegians, I grew up with a very pro-Israeli view. Norway used to be the most pro-Zionist country in Europe, actually. And my mother taught me that, you know, we had to support Israel. It was like a socialist experiment with the kibbutzes. They made the desert bloom. They were defending themselves against the dirty Arabs trying to kill them. And this was the narrative that I grew up with. So in 1967, I actually volunteered to go to Israel to go in and support the kibbutzes and to replace the people who went to fight the Arabs. And I went to the Israeli embassy and volunteered, and they checked me out and said, good to go. And then I was called by a good friend of my sister who was an activist in the Palestine Committee, and she said, I think you got it wrong. And we talked the whole night through. She told me the Palestinian narrative. And I went back the next day and withdrew my volunteering and became a member of the Palestine Committee. And then in 1981, I went to Lebanon for the first time with an emergency surgical team to support the Palestinian healthcare there during the first Israeli bomb attack on Beirut. And I went back in 82 during the siege and the invasion of Lebanon. And I really firsthand experienced the Israeli war machine.
What was that like?
It was awful. It was dreadful. It was like a nightmare. It made Dante's Inferno look like a tea party, as said the Canadian ambassador to Lebanon. It was my first experience with war, with the injuries of war, with the sufferings of the civilians, not only the Palestinians, but the Lebanese as well.
And you were treating them as a doctor?
Absolutely. I was, by then, I had started my training as an anesthesiologist. I was very interested in trauma. And we did war surgery around the clock. We were wading in blood. The Israeli war machine attacked anything that moved, ambulances, apartment buildings, hospitals, everything.
So this is like a little MASH unit you had then, a little emergency war unit. There were like 16,000 people killed in this invasion?
Well, the numbers are contested, but a large number were killed and even a much larger number were injured. And the Israeli forces used the same tactics basically as they used during Operation Cast Lead. They besieged the city, they cut the water supply, the energy, the medical supplies, and the food supplies. So it's trying to starve out the population and thus make them surrender, which they did not do. So from 82, I think I've been a very sort of dedicated supporter of the Palestinian people's cause. I don't support, like Hamas or Fatah or Jihad. I support, along with the Norwegian Palestine Committee, the Palestinian people and their right to fight for justice and for independence, like any occupied people have the right, also anchored in international law, to fight for their independence and against occupation.
Do you think some of the Palestinians who've taken up arms have taken the wrong tactic and should have used more nonviolent protest? There are a lot of nonviolent protests among Palestinians, I know.
Well, as a solidarity person, not being Palestinian, I will leave it to the Palestinians to choose their path and to choose their leaders. That is not for me to interfere with. I come from a small nation, Norway. We're 5 million people. We're stinking rich. We're so affluent, we don't even understand it. But we fought the Danes who occupied us for 400 years. The Swedes occupied us for 100 years. And the Germans occupied us for 5 years. So we know what it means to be a small, independent nation. And we know what it means to fight the armed struggle against an occupant.
There's a lot of resistance against the Nazis.
Of course, of course. And there is we have a history of fighting really hard for sovereignty. And I think that may be one of the explanations for the strong solidarity movement in Norway towards the Palestinian cause.
And tell me when you first went to Gaza or the West Bank.
Well, I have been working in occupied Palestine for the last 15 years, mostly in Gaza. I was there during both the Intifadas. I was there during Operation Summer Rain and all the other campaigns or attacks, military attacks. So I've been doing teaching and training and medical work for 15 years in Gaza. Many of my best colleagues and friends live in Gaza, are Palestinians. I'd been to Gaza three times in 2008. I just came back from Gaza in November before the attack was launched on the 27th of December. So, you know, it's part of my professional activity. And I go there on behalf of my university hospital. It's part of my duty, actually, because we do consider international medical solidarity work as an important obligation for our hospital.
And what are medical conditions at hospitals like in Gaza?
Well, you have to remember that the Palestinian people is one of the highest educated people of the Middle East. They have first-class healthcare. They have academically well-trained doctors and nurses and paramedics. But of course, the whole healthcare system in Gaza is extremely stained by the long-lasting siege, which has been on now for 14 years. It actually started gradually in 2000 and was stepped up in a very harsh way in 2006 and amounts to a total siege. So it's extremely hard to get in anything for maintenance, for repair, for expansion, for rebuilding hospitals. And even under these extremely difficult conditions, the Palestinian healthcare workers manage quite well the uninterrupted flow of injured and maimed people who come when the Israelis are attacking. And of course, during the 3 weeks of Operation Cast Lead, it was extreme. It was dreadful.
Well, let's talk about that for a second. I'm speaking with Dr. Mads Gilbert. He's an anesthesiologist. He's co-author of this book, Eyes in Gaza, that talks about what it was like to be there in the winter of 2008-2009, right? And he also is at the University Hospital of North Norway. So you're in Gaza before the invasion. Did you sense that the invasion was coming?
No, not at all. But what I did sum up when I went back in November was that, you know, I'm not sure how much longer they can take the siege. So I went back and I did a lot of talking and sort of tried to influence the Norwegian government in different ways. And I was very concerned because it seemed like the whole Palestinian society, civil society, was on its knees from the siege. And then on the third day of Christmas, when I heard at noon about the bombing, I immediately decided that I wanted to go. We were asked by the Minister of Health in Gaza to come. So I called my good friend, Eric Fosse, with whom I co-founded the Norwegian Aid Committee in 1983. And we just packed the luggage and went straight that afternoon. And we were supported, interestingly, by the Norwegian government, who funded, actually, our mission, and who supported, by their diplomatic efforts, our entrance to Gaza through Rafah, through Egypt. So we came into Gaza on New Year's Eve, 3 days after the onslaught started, went straight up to Shifa Hospital, reported to the Minister of Health, Dr. Bassem Naim, and he said, you're going to work in Shifa. And we went to Shifa, and we worked day and night for the next 12 days. Mm.
Tell me what that experience was like.
It's very, it's extremely hard to describe, because imagine being in a city which is darkened by the lack of electricity. It's lacking everything, food, water, anything you need for daily life, heating of the houses. All the window panes in the surgical block were shattered by the Israeli bombing. They bombed the hospital mosque on the second day. And there is an endless current of injured, maimed, dying, killed, in particular civilians, 80 to 90% civilians, 50% of those coming in, women and children. Remember, in Gaza, the average age of the population is 17.6 years. 60% of the 1.5 million are less than 18 years old. They come in, they came in bags, they came in the arms of their parents, mm-hmm. in taxis, carried in all sorts of ways.
You start the book off, Eyes in Gaza, with a description of one of these patients, Jumana. Tell me about her.
Jumana Samouni came in all alone. She was 9 months. Her left hand was severely damaged. We had to amputate almost all of it. Her mother was gone. We heard rumors there had been a massacre in Saitun against the Samouni family. I didn't believe it first. Then I talked to an auntie who came, and then the mother came in the morning. She told me she was 18 years old, the mother, Maisa Samouni. She told me her husband, the father of Jumana, the little girl, had been killed next to her, and that the Israelis had gathered 100 family members from the Samouni clan, the family, into a warehouse in Saitun. And then in the morning, the early morning, they started shelling that warehouse, killing around 30 family members and injuring about 60. Those who managed to fly got away. The remaining people and the dead ones and the injured were forcefully kept in the building for 3 more days because the Israeli soldiers denied access to ambulances and international bodies. It turned out this was a premeditated, planned, or at least systematically executed massacre of this family system. And they were civilians. They were not armed fighters. They were, you know, like you and me, with no arms. And I've met many of the family members in the site, in the Samouni family, and I met them now in January when I went back to Gaza. And it's almost incomprehensible that nobody is held responsible and nobody is taken to court, nobody is sort of sued for these very clear violations of international law and basic fundamental moral laws about how you treat people. And this was not the only, by no means, the only massacre. You had other. You had the Abd al-Rabu family, where the Israeli soldiers at point blank shoots 3 small girls. 2 of them are killed. The third is paralyzed from the waist and down for the rest of her life. Very, very extensively documented by all the reports. There is no doubt about what happened. Nobody held responsible. Nobody taken to court. And the ICC in Hague just recently, a few days ago, rejected the call for a trial of the Israeli government and the Israeli officers, the commanders, for crimes against humanity and war crimes. What was the reason for the rejection? Oh, Palestine is not a state entity. It's like having 2 soccer teams playing. The one team has no rules at all. The other team has to oblige the rules of FIFA. And the judge cannot give a red card to the one team who is 4 times stronger than the other team. What kind of world is this? Why is Israel, the state of Israel, getting away with attack after attack, with years after years of collective punishment of the Palestinian people who has done nothing wrong?
What's your answer to that?
My answer to that is that Israel has managed, the state of Israel has managed to position itself in the crossroad between the collective guilt of the Western Hemisphere and of, in particular, of Europe and the United States for the rightful, so criticized, lack of attention and lack of responsibility during the Nazi regime. And Norway is one of the states who really has a black history on not supporting the Jews in the 30s and the 40s. But that has been exploited as a means to uphold a new position for the state of Israel. And that is to be an occupant. And we have to separate those two issues. I'm a strong supporter of the Jewish people's right to exist and right to be defended. Of course, I'm not a racist. I'm not an anti-Semite, not at all. But to transform that into a political tool to stop all criticism of the state of Israel as being an occupant is fundamentally wrong. The second thing, of course, is that your leaders, the political leadership of the United States of America, is the absolutely decisive factor for the upholding of the occupation of Palestine through its financial support of Israel. The father of the grandfather of Jumana Samouni, the girl we just talked about, I talked to him now in January, and I said, I'm going to the U.S. on a speaking tour. What am I going to tell the American people? And he said, tell them this, your tax money is killing us, period. And I think that's a fairly precise description of the political realities. So how long can the American people, the people of the United States, tolerate that their government is actually contributing actively to the oppression, the occupation, and the killing of an innocent people, the Palestinian people?
Well, I think it goes on because of the dehumanization of the Palestinians.
Precisely. And we saw that. We saw the T-shirts that Israeli soldiers were making, you know, where Palestinians are portrayed as children, as legitimate targets, you know. The smaller, the harder. Kill them. A pregnant Palestinian woman. One shot, two kills. With the crosshair on the abdomen of the woman. And this is a well-known tactic. What did the Germans call the Jews? Untermensch. Under people. Mm. What did the Tutus call the Hutus?
Cockroaches.
Cockroaches. Mm. What did Sharon call the Palestinians? Insects. Mm. This is a systematic way of making us treat the others as different from us. It's extremely dangerous. And history is full of examples of this. And as of 2012, it is still going on. Mm. With nobody reacting to it. At least not the sort of the global powers. And the Palestinians keep asking me, why is there one law for Israel and another law for the others? Why is there sanctions, boycott, and military interventions against Saddam Hussein, against Gaddafi, who are bad rulers? And nothing, not even peaceful means, as were applied against the South African apartheid, to stop apartheid systems. Because Zionism and the State of Israel and their current political praxis is apartheid. And Nelson Mandela has said, and Desmond Tutu has said, it's much worse than South African apartheid was. Still, it goes on as we are speaking.
I'm speaking with Dr. Mads Gilbert, an anesthesiologist who's co-author of a book called Eyes in Gaza. He is a professor and department head at the University Hospital of North Norway, the northernmost university in the world. He's done a lot of global health work, not just in Palestine, but in Cambodia and in Burma, among other places. In your book, you have you recount one Palestinian doctor, just you're talking to him, imploring him about what should be done, and his answer was a startling one. We have no human rights.
That's right. Dr. Hamid, who actually was the one who did the surgery on Samar Abdarabu, the small girl.
Another different small girl.
Yeah, the mm-hmm. only one survivor of this shooting episode where the Israeli soldier comes out of the Merkava tanks, picks up this M16, and shoots at point blank three small girls who were forced to come out of the house with their father, grandmother, and mother. She has an injury to the back. We treated her.
You show the picture. It's quite dramatic.
It's quite dramatic. Yeah. And she came to the hospital like Jumana, all alone in the afternoon. We didn't know what had happened. After having done the surgery, we went to see her, of course, in the recovery room. And I asked Dr. Hamid, how can this go on? We've been having this attack for 10 days. And the number of killed and injured children is mounting. How is this possible? And he looked at me and he said, Dr. Mads, you know, we have no human rights. Mm. And I think that precisely sums up the position of the Palestinian people. We are exempted from the universal human rights. Not only that, but also from international laws, which is regulating warfare. You know, the Israelis are supposed to uphold the international laws, which is actually imposing on the fighting parties to apply proportional force. Whereas the Dehaisha Doctrine, which is the new Israeli military doctrine, says we will apply disproportional force. We will bomb Gaza back for decades into the past so that they will never have an appetite for attacking or, resist the occupation.
But that's a strategy that's been proven futile. And I just don't understand the long-term view of the Israeli government, what their policy is. The Palestinians aren't going away. The resistance isn't going to end. The continued occupation and brutality is giving Israel a black eye in the international community, in the Arab world, in the Muslim world, and in the world of human rights advocates. What's the end game?
Well, I think the end game has to be that the people of Israel and the people of the United States have to take responsibility, historic responsibility, stand up and say enough is enough. I think, you know, it's very promising. This is my sixth invited speaking tour to the United States on Gaza since 2009. It would have been unheard of 10 years ago. Mm. I would never have been invited.
Now, so you see the opinion changing in the United
absolutely.
States?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. People want the narrative of the Palestinians. And the BDS, the Boycott, Divestment, Sanction movement is moving on. And what the Israeli government fears more than anything is international isolation and precisely these nonviolent, politically accepted tools of consumers boycott, divestment, academic boycott. So I think every one of us have to take this historic opportunity and responsibility to stand up and say enough is enough. We don't want this. We want security for Israel and the people of Israel, and we want security, freedom, and justice for the people of Palestine. If we don't do anything, if we keep silent, we become complicit, and history will judge.
Speaking with Dr. Mads Gilbert, he's the co-author of this book, Eyes in Gaza, that recounts his time in Gaza treating victims of the Israeli invasion in the so-called Operation Cast Lead in 2008-2009. Did you ever fear for your safety, your own safety, during that invasion?
No, I didn't. Well, you know, when you treat people who have lost both legs, one arm, lost their eyes, lose their lives, you understand that you're not immortal. And the Israelis were threatening to bomb Shifa to get us out, actually.
Shifa, the name of the hospital.
Yeah, the Shifa hospital, the biggest hospital in Gaza. And the Norwegian authorities, the government, actually called us and said, you have to get out because the Israelis are going to bomb the hospital.
But you told them you weren't going to get out.
And we said, we're not leaving. If they bomb the hospital, we're going to die here. That's it. That's the end game. We're not going to do that. But of course, that was reflecting the enormous strategical importance of conveying information, of giving the interviews. I mean, we gave 15 to 20 interviews a day because part of the tactic of Israel was to black out Gaza, to deny access for any international journalists and press outlets into Gaza.
You write about one, I just wanted to follow up on one of the interviews you did was with Fox News, of all things. Yes. And tell what happened there.
Well, it was a good interview, and it was actually written up in a nice way on their website within a couple of hours. But the caption read, you know, across the whole web page, it read, the Hamas propaganda doctor with a big picture of me in the emergency room. And of course, this is the way you, the American public, are being lied to. I mean, there is a constant distortion of reality, of truth, through the media way the media is actually describing the situation in Palestine and in Gaza. So I think, you know, you need to teach your media to be fulfilling their role as objective reporters, which they are not doing, to put it least.
There is this muzzling of anyone who dares to criticize the policies of the state of Israel. Most recently, we saw it with the outcry over Hunter Gross, the Nobel Prize winning novelist, author of The Tin Drum and many other books. What was your reaction to that?
Well, I read the poem of Günter Grass, and I thought it was, you know, it was a fairly soft-speaking poem considering the situation. But you're right. I mean, this is again back to what we discussed, the mix-up of the historical responsibility for the Holocaust with the relevant and sober criticism of the politics of the State of Israel today, which is on purpose mixed together. Anybody criticizing the politics of the State of Israel is named and stamped and branded an anti-Semite.
And he acknowledged that in the poem, too. That was one of the odd things.
Yeah.
He recognized that this criticism was coming.
And we've been called anti-Semites. Remember, we wrote a paper for The Lancet while in Gaza. It was published on the 17th of January. The same day, Mark Regev, the spokesperson of the Israeli government, came out with a very strong statement condemning Dr. Eric and myself and the editor of The Lancet for having published the paper. It told the truth. When the book came out, again, condemnation, we're liars, we're not telling the truth, we are, you know, really, we're criminals,
well,
and
how
we're
do you
anti-Semites.
How do you respond to that final one that seems to close all arguments? You're an anti-Semite.
I say I would never be a racist. To be an anti-Semite is to be a racist. I am an anti-racist. I support any nation, any nationality, any color of people. I'm a strong friend of the Jewish people. I have many Jewish friends. I am an anti-Zionist, and I will never be silenced by the rhetorics of calling me an anti-Semite. I will never be silenced by that. And I think we have to look through these rhetorics. And it's a hollow weapon. It's a very cowardish way of avoiding discussing the realities by naming people this and that instead of discussing the real things. What are the situation? What are the realities on the ground?
I mean, it is amazing, this silencing, because if you criticize policies of the State of Israel and you're not Jewish, you're called an anti-Semite. If you criticize the policies of the State of Israel and you are Jewish, as I am, you're called a self-hating Jew. And so there is a null set of people who can criticize the policies of the State of Israel. And it's interesting, I did a little commentary that we put on our website at the Progressive, progressive.org. I'm the editor at the Progressive magazine on the Huntergrass poem. I got a call the next day from someone who identified himself as a Jewish American, said, "Are you a Jewish American?" I said, "Yes, I'm a Jewish American." He said, "You should be ashamed of yourself. I hope you die." That was the whole conversation. I mean, it is just, it's amazing to me. It's frightening. Not that I'm worried about my own safety, but it's frightening because it is such a suppression of dialogue.
And at the end of the day, I think it is hurting the Jewish people. I think it's hurting the state of Israel because really, what we need is an open, democratic, and frank discussion. And anybody who tries to cover that up by shying away through rhetorics or through naming of your opponent is really a threat, will be a threat to the Jewish people and to the security of Israel, because a nation occupying another nation will never have safety and security until that is resolved. And there are no military solutions to the occupation of Palestine. There are only political solutions.
And the ongoing occupation of Palestine is an incubator of anti-Semitism around the world, it seems to me.
It's the mother of all wars today.
Now, tell me, you were back in Gaza at the start of this year, 2012. What was the situation there?
It's very bad. The siege is going on. The Israeli siege of Gaza is as harsh as ever. Almost nothing gets in. It's become a smuggler economy due to the 600 tunnels. Commodities are extremely expensive. 75% of the population is living below the UN poverty line. Starvation or malnutrition among children is rampant. The majority of children are anemic and malnourished, and they don't grow normally because of the lack of proteins. And the incursions and attacks are almost daily by Israeli warplanes and drones. And the majority of those getting killed are civilians and injured are civilians.
So, were you practicing medicine when you were there this time?
Yes, I did. I did participate in the treatment of a number of children who had like bullets and fragments still in their bodies 3 years after. Let me use this opportunity to underline that Dr. Eric and I, we are no heroes. The heroes are the Palestinian health workers, the doctors, the nurses, the volunteers, the paramedics. They were the heroes, they are still the heroes, and they stand by their people. They don't leave. They could leave for good jobs in Europe and safety. They stay, and they have my deepest respect. And I think that all of us, regardless of political background, should take a responsibility and stand up and say, enough is enough. We don't accept the occupation of Palestine and the siege of Gaza, which has devastating effects as we are speaking.
I've been speaking with Mads Gilbert. He talks about Eric. Eric is his co-author, Eric Fossey.
Fossa.
The book that they co-wrote is called Eyes in Gaza. It is a very powerful read about the situation in Gaza during the Israeli invasion of 2008 and 2009. There's some very disturbing photos and quite gripping accounts of treating young children, very young children, with terrible war injuries. That's what's going on the ground at the human level. You know, we read here in the United States kind of colorless, bloodless accounts of what's going on and biased ones at that. And this is a real different account. And I would encourage you, if you've been listening to the show, to get this book, Eyes in Gaza. Dr. Mads Gilbert, so much pleasure for me to have you in the studio. Thanks for being my guest today.
Thank you.
Today's program is available online at progressive.org. You can also write to us at 409 East Main Street, Madison, Wisconsin, 53703. Our music is by MUFA. Progressive Radio is produced by Elizabeth DiNovella and engineered at Audio for the Arts in Madison, Wisconsin.